You are tuned to WMNF Tampa. Stay tuned for the Sunday Forum coming your way right now.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition of the Sunday Forum here on WMNF 88.5 Tampa, Sarasota, St. Pete. This is your host, Walter L. Smith II, along with the members of the 4th Estate crew. Notice I said members.
Good morning.
Good morning, Miko. I'm going to speak to you first.
Okay.
Good morning, Miko.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Now the other person is here.
Oh, okay. Oh, right.
Right?
Yeah.
We did just fine by ourselves. But you know. What's up, man?
Yes, y'all did. I'm great.
Glad to have you back, brother. Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir.
All right. Miko.
Yes.
What's up?
Nothing. How you doing? I'm okay.
You good?
Uh-huh. I'm good. Okay. Yes.
All right. Mabili?
I'm good.
How you doing? Everything good?
Everything good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So,
just hello. Last week, I do apologize. I was on a date Saturday night with Paul Besson and Smirnoff and Patron.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I overslept a little bit, just a little bit.
All right, man. Yeah, I think you've done. I think you've done a good job. Here that you can enough here that you can we can allow you a couple of Parmesan beats.
I can play hooky every now and then.
Yeah, every once in a while. Every once in a while. Every once in a while. News. What's going on?
Well, okay. So Gabby, I'm sure you've heard about the girl who's been missing, right? Gabby, let's see. Her name is Gabby Petito. She has remained... Okay, yeah, I'm sure I'm saying her last name wrong. Sorry. But she's been missing since September the 1st. Her and her boyfriend went on a trip in July, and he came back by himself. And right away, he became a person of interest. Mm-hmm. And now he is gone missing. So now the police are searching for him and for Gabby. And before they went missing, there is footage or a video of them getting into an argument where the police had pulled them over and they took them both in. But they apparently, I guess the girl had some kind of reaction, scratched his face and whatever. But
okay.
Yeah, so. Yes, they're both missing, and police are searching for
them. I think we kind of know what happened here.
Yeah, right? I do. Well, I suspect. Everybody does. I think he did it, of course.
Wow.
It's tragic because her dad has gotten on TV multiple times and said his only main concern is for her return home safe, which, you know, I hope so as well, because that's... I'm sure as a parent, it's devastating to lose, a child. Would never wish that on anyone.
You don't wish that on anybody. That not on anybody. I'm going to hold my news. I'm going to hold my news until after.
Okay.
After. Mabili, what's up, man?
Well, I mean, we are... If you know anybody from St. Kitts and Nevis today, just say Happy Independence Day.
Jump. They're always jumping.
Okay.
St. Kitts, all the music, jump.
That Poochie music, okay. You might have to find some of that music. But, St. Kitts and Nevis, the islands were among the first to be colonized by the Europeans. And... among the latest to be decolonized. They didn't win as independence until 1983.
Right. So. I have a friend of mine, my best friend from engineering school was from St. Kitts and Nevis. Mm-hmm. And, man, let me tell you something, man. Those are some of the most disciplined people academically that you ever want to know. This dude, if anybody knows anything about college credits, this dude would take 22 hours.
Oh, really?
A semester.
Jeez, he must have really been into school.
I'm saying, and didn't miss a beat. Like, making an A was nothing in engineering with this dude. Like, if you know anything about engineering, you know that that's not an easy feat.
Yes.
For this guy, it was like a walk in there and just, you know, he read a book and he was ready for the test. Like, dang, bro. Oh. Like, in a matter of moments, he was like, you check it out. I'm going to check this right here. Okay, we can go. I'm like, man, dude, shout out to Nigel Richardson, by the way, and the Richardson siblings. His brother, he had a little brother and a sister that came in after him, and they did the same thing, just went right through the school like it was nothing. But, that's the extent of my experience with people from St. Kitts and Nevis personally, although I know I'm sure I know a bunch of others that just didn't know they were from there, probably, right?
Yeah.
And
you know, you could be from there in a way, because they have one of the best citizenship by investment programs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so Lebanon has a lot of citizens there as a direct result of that.
I heard about that.
Yeah. So you could be a St. Kitten in Nevisian.
Wow. St. Kitten, Nevisian.
And yeah.
That sounds Russian.
Be good to hear from some of them today, I think. Just talk about that. Plus, they have a, because of that citizenship by investment program, they're able to take care of those families living at or below the poverty line during giving them a stimulus during this pandemic.
Oh, okay.
So there are about 5,000 families right now taking complete advantage of that right now in St. Kitts and Nevis.
Well, that's good. At least they have. That's very good. That's very good. So now let me get down to it. Can you give me the cord there? Here it is. Got it right here. Got it set up. So anyway, folks, let me tell you. I am very concerned. I'm concerned because, and yes, we do have guests today. But I'm concerned about our lack of ability to respond to this issue of the young lady, the 4-year-old baby from our community that was murdered, shot while she was in her car seat driving down Hillsborough Avenue in August of this year. Just last month. Something wrong. A lot of people saw what happened. This isn't like nobody saw it. No. They saw this. And the police are well aware of the fact that people saw it, and they have said very much, you know, somebody say something. I got a real problem with this thing, and I'm not sure if it's, you know, no snitching or whatever it is. I don't know. But a 4-year, or whether they realized whether the 4-year-old child was the same, was in that car. A 4-year-old child was in that car. She was shot, and she later died at the hospital. That is not something that we let go.
You're talking about Sunny Bell.
Sunny Bell.
Yeah.
Sunny Bell.
Well, apparently people have been going knocking door to door looking for information, and there is a $10,000 offering.
$9,500. Yeah, $9,500 is being offered as a reward. But here on this show, we're going to say her name. Justice for Sunny Bell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We want justice for Sunny Bell. Somebody saw what happened. Come out and tell what happened. Please. Please. There was a time in our community where we had something called honor.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let this be the time that we have no honor.
That even if we didn't talk to police, that we talked to one another and solved the problem.
Come on, come on, come on.
Yeah, it all starts with us.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Please, please, y'all, say something.
You can call up here.
Call up here and tell us if you want to tell us. We'll do it. You know, whatever. I'm not worried about any $9,500. I'm worried. My concern is this child who now is gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Her mother can't get her back. 4 years old.
Needlessly. And who were you shooting at? Who were they shooting at in the first place?
They believe it was a case of mistaken identity.
Probably.
Because the car pulled up next to them and they started shooting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I say the authorities believe that it was a case of mistaken identity, the mayor has pointed that out. As they go through the investigation, they're finding that it's increasingly becoming the case. They believe that's what's happening.
Okay.
Very tragic.
Yeah, that's more than tragic. Yeah. That's a dadgum shame before God that nobody will come forward and say anything.
And you help yourself out if you're the shooter. If you turn yourself in and cooperate.
Man.
You get less time, you make a better deal for yourself, so just get it off the way. We want to know what happened to Sunny Bell.
Come on, y'all. Come on. So, anyway, that's what I wanted to wait for. I just, that's been eating at me. Shout out to Diane Hart, Representative Diane Hart, for what she has been doing in trying to get this out. I really appreciate her work on this effort. And shout out to everybody that's been working on this thing. I remember when she came out with this a couple of weeks ago, about 2-3 weeks ago, and she was actually in a parking lot. I'm not sure where she was in the parking lot, but I'm suspecting it was on Hillsborough Avenue.
Yeah, I think at Hillsborough and 40th.
But yeah, that's actually where it happened, actually.
Yeah, on Hillsborough and 40th. Around that area, mm-hmm. putting out flyers and exactly. that information.
Exactly. Shout out to Andrew Warren, state attorney, who was out there as well, helping with the situation and discussing things with folk, opening himself up for discussion out there. But we this is eating me up because, you know, I'm going to be a grandfather on Monday again.
Oh, it's happening Monday?
Happening Monday. Juju will be here.
Okay. Congratulations.
That's his nickname. My grandson Juju will be here. And shout out to my daughter and her husband. I just honestly, it's eating at me.
It's a different thing when a four-year-old, just like in D.C. when the guys ran through shooting and the four-year-old got caught up. You don't want to see a child get caught up in these grown-up wars.
No, you don't. You really don't. You really don't, man. And you don't. And we shouldn't have them anyway.
Right.
We shouldn't have them anyway.
Solving problems with your gun. Yeah.
Come on, man. Come on. You know, we talk about black-on-black crimes. You know, the crimes in our community, period. It's just crime in our community. That's a problem, man. That's a problem that we just, honestly, we got to face it again and get back to it. I think we kind of drifted from it.
Yeah,
you know, during the 90s, yeah. During the 90s, we had a real big campaign on that.
Right,
on that,
stop the violence. And, right. Yeah, we've lost that, definitely, because it's become... Now the cool factor to have the gun and the pop off, you know, and we write songs more and more about that. You know, we have one song where beat bop, you know, it's not what it used to mean. You know,
now
it's popping off. You know, driving nice cars, and you go on YouTube now, you see these stars driving their nice cars, and they get out the car and start shooting. I mean, come on, because you're surrounded by people. Who just want to be seen, I guess, and they do whatever they can to be seen. And we need to stop, you know, glorifying it. It's just that simple. And I think that's what's going on. You know, we've glorified the violence of drug dealing. You know, ever since they came out with Scarface, you know, you can't be the dude without saying this is the way. This is the life.
Mm-hmm.
This is the life, you know, living like that.
It's not a death style.
It always gets you killed.
Right, it's a death style,
mm-hmm.
not a lifestyle. So we need to remember that, you know, we're too desensitized to the impact of that violence on the communities. You know, a lot of people live in their communities like they're trapped.
Right.
And they don't want to go outside. They don't want to, when they come home, they're surrounded by strangers, basically, who've taken over their neighborhoods. And nobody likes living like that. And then these wars break out, and kids get shot up as a result of them. And I think that's what happened to Sonny Bell, and especially if it's a mistaken identity.
Absolutely, man. Well, anyway, any more news, guys?
No.
Nothing from the continent right now?
No.
Okay. All right. No updates on COVID numbers for this week on the continent?
Oh, no. Nothing.
Okay. Anything here?
Just that we're looking at the third shots, the booster shots.
Yes.
And the president wanted it for everybody that took the two shots, but The FDA has decided, Food and Drug Administration, felt like that wasn't necessary, that 65 and over is probably enough for right now. And anyone with pre-existing conditions. And I think I agree with that. You know, we got the rest of the world, especially on the continent of Africa, that haven't got access to the first shot. Right. And we're all trying to get a booster.
I know. No, it's ridiculous.
It's not necessary.
I think they might do the booster for people in healthcare. They were in talks of that because obviously.
You're in close proximity.
Yes, we are exposed to COVID patients. But if that happens, obviously I will be getting the third booster. Well, it's required. If not, then you have to get tested, I think, every 2 weeks like we've been doing. And the numbers have gone up here in Florida.
Yeah.
They continue to rise, of course, because there's a lot of, there's still a lot of people out there who won't get vaccinated. So
resistant, denying.
Yes. In denial, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
All those words. Mm-hmm.
That's where we are. The numbers are going up.
They continue to go up. Now, California, I read, they're the ones that have the lowest cases. And I think that's because they've been, like, doing extra stuff, like requiring vaccination at most job places. They require you to have the card on you if you want to eat at a restaurant or go to a movie theater. My friend told me this the other day. And then they have to still wear their mask everywhere. So their cases have gone down a lot.
And the fascist Republican of California tried to overthrow or recall that governor and lost.
Oh, the black one you're talking about?
The California governor.
Oh, okay.
Kevin,
yes.
And lost.
Yeah, man.
They tried to take advantage.
Was that a waste?
Of the pandemic, yeah.
Was that a waste or what?
Very big waste.
Well, I'll tell you what. What were you saying, Billy? I'm sorry.
No, just that Larry Elder was the leading Republican on the ballot? Come on, man. Larry Elder, some idiotic talk show host. Come on. He was already saying it was rigged before anybody voted. Come on.
Well, listen, I want to take the time and thank everybody for joining us this morning. It's now 8:28 in the a.m. We want to thank you all for joining us here on 88.5, WMNF 88.5, on WMNF.org if you're listening there. Or if you're watching us right now, you're watching us from the Walter L. Smith II Facebook page and the Sunday Forum Facebook page as well. You can check us out in both places, the Sunday Forum Facebook page and the Walter L. Smith II page. Check them out. Please share with a friend. Like. And make sure you share. And make sure you're telling people, come check it out right here on WMNF at 8.5 Tampa. Hey, listen, another announcement. Tell them I'm going to make it. Tell them I'm going to make it.
All right.
This is a nationally acclaimed gospel stage play that's written and produced and directed by Dr. Sean L. Smith. It's going to be on November 13th of this year. Doors open at 6 p.m. Doors open at 6 p.m. on Saturday, November 13th. Start the show at 7:30. Hey, listen, ticket information can be gotten at Tellem, TellemGRP.eventbrite.com. Ticket information at TellemGRP.eventbrite.com. Or you can get more information on www.grandroyalproductions.com. www.grandroyalproductions.com. Or you can call 803-761-8995. That's 803-761-8995. Tell them I'm going to make it. The nationally acclaimed gospel stage play written by and produced and directed by Dr. Sean L. Smith. Hey, check it out. Check it out. November 13th. I haven't been to one of those things in quite some time, but I remember how Madea started out.
Yeah.
Remember that? It started out as a stage play.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it was really, really good. Because after that, you had subsequent things, subsequent shows, and all of them had to do with everybody's favorite mama, Madea.
Right.
Right? You know, shout out to Tyler Perry for that, man, and the work that he's done. You know, I think the first one I remember ever really paying attention to was Mama, I Wanna Sing, which was Tisha Campbell.
Okay.
Tisha Campbell was in that stage play. That was a gospel stage play that she was in. And I want to say Tichina Arnold was also in there as well.
The two women from Martin?
From Martin. That's exactly right. Okay. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So tell them I'm going to make it. Shout out to Dr. Sean L. Smith. So we appreciate your information. And we appreciate you all for, again, tuning in. Please make sure that you are sharing and liking this information on Facebook. Check us out. Call in 813-239-9663 as we have a very good show with you this morning. A very, very good show for you this morning. And this is about the history of black organized crime this morning. That is a very interesting subject. A very interesting subject that we're going to get into this morning. Our guest is going to be, in a few minutes, we'll bring him on. Kevin Liddell. Kevin Liddell is a good friend of mine. He is an historian on this. He's really, really good at it. Really good at it. I thought I was good. This guy's good. This guy's really good. So we're going to bring him on in a few minutes. But first, we have a young lady who is 17 years old. 17 years old. We're very proud to have her here. Let's see, Nico.
She's on line number two.
Okay, let's bring her on real quick. Okay.
Caitlin, you're on the air.
Caitlin, good morning. Hello, Caitlin.
Hello.
Hey, Caitlin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
All right. Now, Caitlin is a 17-year-old student at Plant High School. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. So, Caitlin, tell us about Sunrise. What is Sunrise?
Sunrise is a youth-led organization that works to fight climate change and work with the government to pass legislation that works against the worst effects of climate change.
Okay, all right. Can you give us an example of climate change, Caitlin? Because a lot of people would hear a 17-year-old on the radio and she's talking about climate change and they're thinking this girl don't know nothing about no climate change. So tell us about climate change. Let's have a conversation.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm still in the learning process, but it's one of those things that we're even seeing today, like just hotter summers, shorter winters, the wildfires in California. That's a lot of that's due to climate change. You know, just floods and tornadoes and hurricanes, seeing those more often. All right. Of that is happening because our Earth is warming.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I'm very proud to hear you talking about this at 17. That's telling me that our children are paying attention, right? You know, one of the things that that I see is that you are a Plant High School student, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And let me just tell you what I want. Okay. I want to see this. I want to see Plant High School reach out to the other schools like Middleton. And I'm not talking Middleton Magnet. I'm talking Middleton. Right?
Yeah.
And getting those kids involved. I want to see Plant High School reach out to Blake. Have you done any of that yet, or are you in your beginning stages right now?
Oh, we actually have been doing that for our upcoming strike.
Very good.
We've messaged on Instagram. We've, like, let friends who have friends know, and we're trying to connect a lot of schools in the area.
Very good. Have you had any success?
We have, yeah. We have a few students from Blake who we've started talking to. Students from, like, high schools as far away as, like, Durant.
Okay. Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. Glad to see it. Glad to hear it. And certainly if there's anything that we can do to help out, you know, we will do that. Now, tell us about why you're here with us this morning.
So I'm here to promote a strike that we are having on September 24th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Tampa City Hall Plaza. It is the Global Day of Climate Action. There's one every year, and this year people from around the world are taking to the streets to strike and demand climate action from our government.
Okay. All right. That's very good. Very good. And what organization has come to you to help you to organize this?
Well, we are working with the Tampa Bay Climate Alliance and an organization called Food and Water Action for yes. our strike.
I know them well. I know them well. Brooke Arrett.
Yeah.
She's a very good friend of mine in the fight for environmental justice. Shout out to Brooke Arrett and all of our comrades there with regard to this whole issue. We're glad to have you here with us. So what can we expect from this?
Well, our strike personally is going to be a huge event. We're really trying to get as many people there as possible. We'll have speakers from a bunch of different environmental communities around Tampa. We'll have a lot of chants and signs out there, and we're hoping to get media coverage and just make this as big as possible, because it's not just Tampa that's doing this. It's Miami, Tallahassee, Orlando, other states, countries, just making as much noise as possible.
Okay. All right. Well, this is something we can really, really look forward to. And so give us the name of it again and the date and location. Date, time, and location.
It's called the Code Red for Humanity Climate Day of Action. It'll be September 24th, this Friday, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Tampa City Hall Plaza, right next to the Tampa City Council.
Okay. All right. Hey, listen, Caitlin, thank you so much.
Yeah,
17-year-old Caitlin, y'all.
All right.
Caitlin, listen. I'm very, very glad to hear your voice. I'm glad to have you here on the show. When we lift this thing up, but Billy knows I would normally have you and about two other of your friends come here in the studio normally, but right now COVID has us locked down limit the numbers of people in the studio. But I tell you what, as soon as this thing is lifted and we can have some of you guys in, I would love to have you come in and come visit us. Okay?
Yeah, I would love to visit for sure.
All right. That's what I'm talking about. All right. Caitlin, take care. Take care.
You too.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate you.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. 17-year-old Caitlin, I will not give her last name because I want to make sure that she's protected as a minor. But Caitlin is 17 years old. She's at Plant High School, and she's doing it up on the climate change tip. You know, if you think that climate change does not affect you folks, you're wrong. You're wrong. You're dead wrong.
I think increasingly, as we see these ferocious storms and we live through hot days, it's going to be apparent to everybody that this is probably one of those wedge of what we call a fusion issue.
Right.
Where everybody can come together, Ryan. Everybody's feels something about it, and everybody has some, it impacts everybody. So,
right, absolutely.
And I think that being 17-year-old is a perfect representation of this being the issue of the next generation. They have to face this.
Yeah, they do. They do. And you know, when we talk about hurricanes, for those people who don't know the science behind hurricanes, this year we had six hurricanes waiting in the Atlantic Ocean.
Right.
Six.
Lined up
to come, just taking turns. Right? And it's because the waters have gotten warmer.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I typically call them Africa's revenge.
Yeah, so do I. Following the windward passage from that the slave ships followed.
Right. And I mean, they're sitting right out there, and they come right off the coast, off the desert and out to the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're waiting. Their water's so warm, and it increases their speed, their strength.
Right.
So when it gets to the Gulf of Mexico, there's no secret that's what it is. The Gulf of Mexico is hot.
Yeah, with all of that oil refinery going on too.
Oh my gosh.
So, that's the last place you want a hurricane to get is in the Gulf.
You don't want that. Don't want it. It gets around there, and then we got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
We got a serious problem. So again this morning, I want to make sure that everybody knows that we're going to be talking about the history of black organized crime. Everybody's watched. A lot of people have watched The Godfather of Harlem, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right? On Epix. That is definitely something that I say to anybody, watch it. Okay? It's got my man Forrest Whitaker on there, who's playing Bumpy Johnson. If you do not know the name of Bumpy Johnson, Bumpy Johnson is one of the premier, so to speak, characters, but he was not a character, he was a real person.
Right.
Bumpy Johnson was a gangster and the head of his own organized crime gang, so to speak, or crime family, if you will, right? That went up against the commission. The Italians, the commission was not just made up of Italians. It started out with Italians, Jews, and Irish gangsters that came together. Most notably, Meyer Lansky. Meyer Lansky, Lucky Luciano, and a host of other people that were a part of this. You watch Boardwalk Empire. Boardwalk Empire was an HBO series that took place in Newark, New Jersey, in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And that was, you saw characters like, black characters like Albert Chalky White, my man, played by Michael K. Williams.
That's right.
Who now has left us.
Plus great actor. Great The Wire actor. And his role in The Wire, Omar.
Exactly. Oh, man.
So we've talked about that character for decades, seems like.
Yeah. And Omar had a code.
That's right.
Omar had a code. And even though he was a murderer, he had a code. He didn't kill you unless you deserved it. The thing about black organized crime, or any organized crime, is that usually there's a code, right? And we're gonna talk about all these things this morning with our man Kevin Liddell when we bring him on in just a few minutes. But before we do, what were you gonna say? What were you gonna say, Nico?
Well, we have two emails from Alvaro that I wanted to read before you bring him on. Our guest.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so the first one is, some 10,000 primarily Haitian people are being deported from U.S. border back to Haiti. That was the first email.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second email is about this art gallery called House of Shadows. It's calling out for Black, Latino, and Indigenous artwork for exhibit, including photography. For more information, should I say the number?
Sure.
Okay. Call 813-773-4111. Or write to contact@hosttampa.com.
Can you read that again, please?
All of it?
No, just the number.
Oh, okay. 813-773-4111. Or write contact@hosttampa.com.
And they want Indigenous artwork, Black, Latino artwork.
Yes.
House of Shadows.
Yes.
Sounds good. Photographers. Good.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
But Alvaro did mention the Haitian people that leaving and lining up at the Texas border, and you're talking about Republicans is saying, throw them back, if that's not humanity out there. This is humanity.
I don't understand. Well, oh, God.
Well,
these people drive me crazy.
They do.
They drive me absolutely nuts. I
they don't want to deal with anything.
They just want this to be white America. Let's just face it.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So it's sick. It's disgusting. It's just all the stuff that's going on right now. It drives me crazy, too.
Yeah. And maybe that's
Welcome to America.
Right. Texas, of all places.
Oh, jeez. Please don't bring that.
Biggest Texas.
I can't believe I used to live there.
I can't believe it either.
Mm.
But yeah. There's plenty of room in Texas. There's plenty of room in the United States. And the problem are There are people who are white that just doesn't want people of color here taking away their political power.
Correct.
Hey, listen. That was a downer. That was another downer. I was trying to bring it back up, y'all. We gonna do our usual wake up song. Everybody ready?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I was watching this documentary yesterday, and it's important that we know this documentary was really, really good, and it was about Rick James. My man, Rick James. No, it's not Rick James' birthday or anything like that, but they paid a really good tribute to him. Someone paid it to him this morning.
Okay.
Rick James, fired up.
All right. Here on the Sunday Forum.
Wake up. 8:47 a.m. Wake on up, y'all. Wake up.
Yeah. Yes.
Rick James, everybody, yeah. Right here on the Sunday Forum at 8:50 in the a.m. Hey, WMNF is starting to jam.
Yeah, you fired them up.
We fired you up now. We're going up. There's no need for you to be up in that bed right now. It's 8:51 a.m. We're pumping through your ear holes right here on the Sunday Forum with our guest, Kevin Liddell. Kevin.
Yes, sir.
Did you get a little bit of that Rick James this morning?
Man, you know something? I used to love Rick James, and I still do. You know, I'm a tad bit younger, you know, but I remember growing up, you know, hearing Rick James. You know, so definitely, you all definitely pump it up this morning, brother.
Yes, sir. How you doing, man?
Well, I'm doing well.
Good.
Well, just, you know, enjoying my adjustment as always in Florida. As you know, I'm not from Florida, so I'm enjoying my adjustments as always. And, yeah, brother, just happy to be here. And I have to thank you all for inviting me to your show.
Absolutely, man. Listen, we're glad to have you here, brother. You know, Kevin and I are very good friends. And I listen to Kevin talk. And we just sit there, and every time we talk, this brother can recite every gang, every organized crime group, the whole nine. I'm like, man, dude, you need to write a book.
Sound like an encyclopedia.
Like, he's an encyclopedia of organized crime. Like, you sure you didn't know these people? Like,
Fascinating history, man.
Folks, it's 8:52 in the morning. We're here with Kevin Liddell this morning, who is a historian of the history of black organized crime. Kevin, listen, tell us about black organized crime. What got you into studying this or understanding this, to know as much as you know?
Well, it was more so by happenstance. You know, I grew up in a pretty rough area, in a pretty rough neighborhood in St. Louis, you know, and I'm not going to get too much into my history, you know, because I don't really want to talk about my history per se, but, you know, I partaked in certain things growing up, you know, and so it's kind of by happenstance, me meeting certain individuals, me befriending certain individuals, certain individuals befriending me and during that lifetime and during that life. Before I subsequently changed my life, of course, and, you know, and I moved away, you know, and just taking an interest in how did we get to this juncture? How did the black community get to this juncture? You know, how did we get to this juncture of living in abject poverty? How did we get to this juncture of living in a lack of economic resources? And why was the main economic proprietors in our community were people in illegal activities? Right. You know,
right.
For the exception of small black business owners. So, you know, that's what kind of got me into it. Me knowing individuals, me partaking myself, not to get too much into it. And that's how I ended up, you know, researching and delving more into it and getting a plethora of information about it. So, you know, plethora of information some plethoras I can share, many I cannot. I'll just say that.
we ain't gonna go there. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, as we look at the history of black organized crime, we cannot do that without looking at the history of gangs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And when we look at gangs, and we look at organized crime, we look at immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Immigration is a real big issue with regard to that. Tell us about that. Talk to us about that.
Well, you know, understanding African Americans in general, especially in cities up north. You know, me being from up north, most of us came from the South. Most of us came from Alabama. Most of us came from Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Mississippi. And upon arriving in major cities up north like St. Louis, Detroit, Chicago, Baltimore, you know, we were dealing with abject racial discrimination, Jim Crow. So black folks were kind of forced to kind of build our own economy, our own self-contained economy in many of these urban centers. Mm. Our own police force in many cases, because as you know, police brutality has always existed in the black community. It's not something that's new. But it was even more overt back in the day, especially, you know, when you didn't have cell phones and video cameras to record police interactions with black folks and black communities. I'm talking about the turn of the century all the way into the 1920s and 30s, when a lot of black folks were flooded into cities up north. So, you know, black organized crime was kind of born out of that need for protection, born out of that need for economic stability, born out of that need for independent black governance on a neighborhood level. A lot of black gangs were utilized for political power, to get political votes in certain black neighborhoods and black wards. A lot of individuals that did nefarious things and got money from it were utilized to fund black small businesses. You know, a lot of black folks, we couldn't go to banks. A lot of them were used to for protection mechanisms to make sure that racist rogue police officers don't attack and beat brothers and sisters up without suffering certain repercussions. Because, you know, back then, a lot of brothers then were a different breed. Right. You know, right. It was kind of like an uneasy, not necessarily uneasy truce, but police knew what they could and could not do in certain communities without a repercussions, and not just protest and bringing attention to the issue, which that happened as well, but also by, you know, you go into the neighborhood guy, and the neighborhood guy may do the local precinct or police captain, and that neighborhood guy will tell, hey, look, your cops can no longer patrol in this neighborhood safely if this continues. You know, kind of indirect threat, but they knew what it was, and, you know, so it was kind of an uneasy truce on that.
Right. And when we talk about that, and usually when people think about this topic, they think in terms of Bumpy Johnson and, Queen St. Clair, who ran the numbers in Harlem, and Bumpy Johnson was an enforcer, if you will, and a host of other people that right now escape me, but they're like a bunch of people that we're gonna talk about today here on the Sunday Forum with our friend Kevin Liddell. You know, we cannot talk about this obviously without actually making reference to the Italian mob, right? Because and then looking at the issue of culture. Right. My observation has always been that it was that what made an organized crime family successful, so to speak, or made it last as long as they've lasted, is the issue of culture. Right. You look at the Tong, Yakuza. That, you know, even the actual mafia itself, La Cosa Nostra, we look at that. We look at the issue of culture there.
Mm-hmm.
What do we, in the next few minutes, we have to go into NPR. Mm-hmm.